Okay, so first of all, it's great to be here, and I feel very privileged to be here at the very first national conference on dance and dementia. But I have to give an apology, because in your outline, you'll see another name associated with this presentation, and it's Nana Spitzer, who is my research student and co-researcher on this project, who is ill. So apologies that you only get me today. So I shall try and speak to both of us. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about this project, and this event has been great for me, because actually it's a project which closed, and I'm tempted not to say ended, because I think with all of these projects they never really end. They sort of carry on in the ether, and carry on in our thinking, and carry on in our consciousness. So I'm not going to say it ended in March, but it came to a close, it came to a conclusion. And coming today has prompted me to re-engage with it, and to think again about what it was that we were doing, why we were doing it, and to start to think about its impact, the potential for it in the future, and indeed what else we might do to cover it. So Dance Connections is a partnership project between the university, Coventry University, and several strands of the university. It was the Institute for Creative Enterprise, which is one of the university's institutes, CMAP, the Centre for Media, Art and Performance, which is my research centre that sits within the School of Art and Design, and the Health and Design Technology Institute. So three strands of the university, and in itself that's quite a challenging prospect. And if anybody works in universities, you'll get what I mean by that. Because already we were talking cross-discipline, we were talking cross-practice, cross-culture, and that's difficult. But we were interested in finding out what that meant. We brought together with us Dance Arts Foundation, who are an arts-led organisation based in London, led by Joan Moran, who have a lot of experience of working in dance and health contexts. And we had a prior relationship and were looking at different collaborative possibilities. And because at that time, ICE, which I will call it, the Institute for Creative Enterprise, was in receipt of Regional Development Agency funding, sadly no more, which was there to support and encourage employability within the creative industry. So we were able to use some of that money and target it towards dance artists in the region to develop employability. So there was a neat relationship, a neat synergy, where we could draw on funding, which would give a free project, no charge for the artists. As long as they were resident in West Midlands, they could come and do the programme. They would have the chance to work with Joe, with his artists, with the benefit of the researchers in the Health and Design Technology Institute, myself within my area, and indeed Nana working with me. So the programme ran from July 2009, and it came to its first conclusion last March, where we had a dissemination day. So although we've been following up the various evaluations, it did have a moment there of closure. We did have a very healthy application from artists, I'm pleased to say. We were able to recruit 12 in total, a broad regional spread. And they came from various backgrounds. Some had come from, they were experienced practitioners with no experience working in health contexts. Some came already with some experience in health, even if that hadn't been with older people or with people with dementia. So there's a range of experience within the group. Because of the HCTI, we were able to use their networks and identify user community youth groups, and of course the researcher from within that area, which I'll talk to you about in a moment. So over the 9 months, we had intensive blocks of training events. Delivery in the studio, artists delivering practical skills, project management skills, skills around ethical processes and so on and so on. And all of that was closely mentored by two wonderful mentors, one of whom you know well now, Richard Coton, who's already spoken today, and Cecilia McFarlane. So we were a broad community. with a lot of expertise in there. And we were targeting, looking specifically at user groups, elders with dementia, memory loss, and reduced mobility. And we concluded with a dissemination event, which was a chance to, well, because of the RVA funding, it was principally about bringing in potential employers. So thinking back to the discussion we had earlier, it was about trying to tell the stories of the project so that employers in the PCT and other health employers could come along, hear from the artist's point of view what their experience was, and give them work. Didn't happen. There have been a few follow-ups, but actually it didn't generate the kind of excitement and potential for employment that we were really hoping for. Nonetheless, it was a wonderful celebratory day. Ken was there, and I think it was a really nice way for everybody involved in the project to sort of feel really positive about what they had experienced. So, what I'm talking about today is really about the research methodology, because integrated within the project was a double-stranded research methodology. One of them, which I led with NAMA, which was about the participant observation process. So NAMA was embedded within the process. She is an artist herself, and she took part in all of the training events. She was an artist, went out to deliver as well. At the same time, running in parallel, was a research process undertaken by a colleague from the HCTI. That was very much an evidence-based approach. And the distinction, I suppose, was that our research, NAMA's research, was really focusing on the artist experience, and the artist experience and how that reflected on the experience of the elders. Whereas the health research was very much working on the experience of, mediated through the carers, the experience of the elders in the community setting. So there was already a distinction there, a distinction that was of course magnified by this distinction in our research methodology. More about that in a moment. So we talked about what were those sort of guiding principles and questions that NAMA would be looking at. And her guiding principles and questions were really, what strategies can dance artists develop to ensure a rewarding experience for themselves, as well as for the older people? Which are the most and the least successful events in addressing the development needs of the participants? By that I mean artists. And what are the benefits of working in a group with others, and what are the challenges? So we were looking very much from an artist's point of view. The health research was very much looking for change. What change was brought about by the elders' experience of this work? Or at least what was the perception of change? So what did NAMA do? She took a lot of notes. So she did this a participant observation process. She took a lot of photography, and I will say that we had some kind of interesting issues around the ethics of that. So photography is largely, almost exclusively, for our own benefit and not for any kind of publication, although I do have permission to show two images of the and she also interviewed two of the artists at different stages during the process. So it's a fairly standard research methodology in that respect. And then at the end of that, for her it was very much about reflecting on that method. What was she recording? Was that appropriate? What to filter out? What was the difference between an embodied engagement with the work, in other words being embedded in it, versus a more passive observation engagement with it? What was the value of the note-taking? And importantly, the importance of description. So there was a lot of describing of the specific events and the activities, because that was what was going to give a key to the ethos, to illuminate the ethos. And I just want to spend a little bit of time talking about some of the themes that came out from that. And of course, in some ways, they confirm what one would have anticipated from the beginning. But particularly the embodied nature of the space in which everybody works provides a valuable experiential way of learning, which then translates to thinking of the participant space as embodied, however different, alien, or unsympathetic it might have been to start. So there was something about if you set the right environment and the space in the training area, that when you translate that into the community setting, then you have some chance of translating that ethos with you. So exercises help dancers think about the individual embodied experience of each of the elders. So through this experience, artists were able to better understand how people with dementia feel, thus helping them to relate to elders more easily. So there are lots of tasks that are given to help with that. And then so this unvoiced, and it wasn't really voiced at the time, but nonetheless shared embodied space led to mutual learning respect and a particular dynamic between the artist and researcher and the artist and the elder. So this dialogue that took place became very productive. And consequently, the artist felt that a warm, friendly environment emerged to support well-being and to help participants feel that they were active in the embodied space making. Artists were encouraged to think of dancing what is inside rather than dancing from the outside in. And that movement and music combined in this way that we know and believe in, that becomes spirit lifters in an atmosphere of celebration. So of course, there are negative sides to it, as we talked about earlier, but essentially it was always looking for the positive experience that we bring. Translation and adaptation. Something that's very important is that the embodied space becomes a dynamic space. Artists had to be prepared for the unexpected. They needed to be adaptable. They needed to translate what they had planned for different numbers and expected for different ages, abilities even. And as we know, this took place over 9 months. So a group that they started with that may have had quite a rich number of participants, even a month later may have had fewer because we had deaths. People died during the process of the project unfolding. Or they were at other friends' funerals. So suddenly a group that was 10 one week became 2 the next. So having to adapt to those changes is very important. Also emotional issues. How do they deal with their own emotional issues, their own sense of anxiety and those of the participants? Because they sometimes emerge unexpectedly. Strategies are needed to manage those. So they leave issues behind in the space where it happens and they don't accumulate problems and anxiety. The sort of things they voiced, of course, is predictable. Will nobody join in? What happens if nobody joins in? They have to develop a thick skin. Identity. Who are they in the space? Dancers tend always, of course, to move between different roles at different times. Artists are teachers, are therapists, are community workers, are many, many more things. How do they find their own identity within this process? So they retain this notion that they are always artists. And that doesn't diminish in their role in a therapeutic or what might be a therapeutic context. And that what they're providing is for themselves a rewarding and growthful experience as well as for the elders. Always the artists were trying to prioritise the participants' stories and memories and their tastes, rather than, as we know, starting from the elders' medical condition, the pathology, or their limitations, but their possibilities. Languaging. Language, very, very important. The sort of language that they generate both in the training space and then take into the community space. So it becomes a safe space. So that the artist can find a safe space to talk about their experiences, their self-experiences through talk. And which translated then to giving a chance for the elders to voice their experiences. However, interestingly, that became a problem at times, because some of the elders came into the activity believing, hoping, wanting to dance, not to talk. And sometimes they found it uncomfortable to be invited to talk about their experience. So that was an interesting moment. So what was accepted as good practice for artists didn't always then we came up with this idea that what actually is going on inside of it is a model of exchange. So we have something that goes on that's a dialogue, it's an exchange. So it supports all of those involved in the project. So, what comes out of this? Project Outcomes and Future. Trust and well-being, we've heard that said a lot. But it underpins the programme, and by trusting in their own practice, the artists are better able to transmit that sense of trust to those that they work with. And I'm just going to read this a little bit very quickly. Dancers who are experienced in working with different user groups are open to the unknown. They can respond quickly, but being in a new context and working with people who are also in a new context can be challenging. The confrontation between the dance artist, who might have security in her practice, but vulnerability when transferred to a new context, and the participant, who may well have preconceptions of the dancer, and perhaps reinforced by those who care for them, can produce a period of anxiety and uncertainty, each negotiating and renegotiating the relationship before moving through the anxiety phase to a more euphoric state, which is born out of this model of exchange. But this can break down when either the artist or participant lacks belief in her own role or ability, or continues with a presumption of distance between the expected and the actual, when the artist herself might feel uncomfortable in her own body and communicate that sense of unease to the participant. So the participant observation methodology seemed to be supportive of the learning and delivery process and what was revealed and what took place. But it did signal that how important it was, and I can't stress enough, to agree what these research methods are at the beginning. Where there are potential synergies, where there are potential conflicts. And to be fair, we were so busy delivering and doing, we didn't do that well enough. And that is a lesson I have learned. That on one hand I was doing a participant observation methodology, my colleagues in health were doing this very much quantitative analysis. They were measuring through the views, mostly of course of the carers, the support workers, not of the individual elder who was not able to report on his or her own experience. So there was a problem there. And it became disruptive because the questionnaires were floating on top. So the environment was established and their questionnaires were coming in. It would feel disruptive because it wasn't embedded. Of course, also what happened was because of the embedded nature of NAMA's work, it magnified the disembodied nature of the other method. So we had a problem in there that became bigger than it needed to have been, probably because we didn't address it earlier. So I take that away as being a big lesson. And there were two episodes which reinforced that were very interesting for us. One of which was simply this notion of what does dance mean? And this anxiety from my colleagues in health who could simply found it very difficult to understand that anybody with any problem with mobility or with memory loss could dance. If they can't move, how could they dance? And that was an interesting moment for discussion. The second moment for discussion was what do we mean by observation? The artists were trained really carefully in a very ethically sound process of observation. It's one that's embedded within our practice as dance artists, that we observe without being intrusive. We observe in this supportive, immersive way. From an ethical point of view, my health colleagues could not be accepted in ethical terms, that the elders could be observed. However, what was accepted was that they could do it covertly through being in an adjoining room and see through a one-way mirror, which we found extraordinary. So there was a sort of breakdown in terms of our own perceptions, our own experiences, and how different ethical processes lead to potential tension. And I did want to just end. We have a wasp's gun. One of the images, that colleague, one of the artists, just to show some of her work, and the one image I am allowed to show to prove that happened. But the other images I don't have permission to show. But I just wanted to end with voices from within, because the artists, of course, are really important in this process. And they talked a lot about what they learned and what was difficult for them and what was great for them. But it talks a lot about the staff not buying into it in the centre and how important it was to have proper space for pre-work, for debriefing, inset work for the staff, and, you know, the usual problems, the sort of things that we're familiar with. All of that prep work that is so important to bring those in the care setting, the community setting, into the experience as well. So it isn't just something which is parachuted in, which drops in and then leaves, but it's about shifting thought, shifting culture. But they've talked about many, many things that they learned. And just to end with one quote from them, very small quote, I have a lot, but one dancer who said, I've learned that I can trust in my dance practice. What we bring is enough. And how the work is validating for them as a dancer. And I want to just say thank you to all of my team involved in this. Nama, who's not here, Joe, who's very important to the project, my colleagues at the university as well, to Cecilia Richards, all of the artists and all of the other people.